Dances, we just heard. That was Copland's Dance from Music for the Theater. And we also heard, before that, the Slavonic Dance in E Minor by Dvorak. The Copland was performed by the New York Philharmonic, conducted by Bernstein, and Dvorak, played by the Czech Philharmonic, conducted by Stokowski. And that's the Saturday Classical Program. I'm Jim Wiener. Thanks for joining me tonight. Stay tuned now for Joel Block and Stardate, followed by Eric Corley with his guest Joe Evangelista on Brain Damage here at 90.1 FM WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate January 23rd. Most constellations or patterns among the stars were invented long ago. The sky is rich in myths. It reflects our ancestors' regard for legendary gods and goddesses. But in the 17th century, a German lawyer named Julius Schiller saw an urgent need for reform. The constellations were designed by heathens, he believed, and in a Christian world, the sky should reflect Christianity. Well, with the help of a talented engraver, Schiller redesigned all the old constellations and changed their names to bring them more in line with stories found in the Bible. Some of the changes were easy. Argo Navis, the great ship that sails the southern skies, became Noah's Ark. The constellation Apis, or Bird of Paradise, became Eve. On the other hand, Schiller made some changes for reasons known only to himself. The constellation Centaur became Abraham. The great dog became David. Orion became Joseph. And in the northern sky, the delicate M-shaped constellation Cassiopeia became Mary Magdalene. Schiller died before his work was published, but in 1627, the manuscript did find its way to a printer. Everyone agreed that the pictures of the new constellations were beautiful, but the idea of a Christian sky never replaced the old myths that were first. Schiller himself may have sped along its rejection by not knowing when to stop. He wanted to rename not just the constellations, but also the planets. For example, he wanted the planet Saturn to be called Adam, and the planet Jupiter, Moses. For January 23rd, that's star date. For the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Has been disconnected.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
The
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
And a very good evening to one and all, here where it's 9 minutes after 10 o'clock, and you have brain damage on your radio on this, the 23rd day of January, 1988. I'm Eric Corley with you until midnight, and tonight we have Joe Evangelista as our special guest. He's not here yet, though, but he will be. You can rest assured of that. Tonight, we'll be talking with him and doing all kinds of other interesting things. The main thrust of tonight's show is going to be on happenings in the Mideast, particularly things going on in the Gaza Strip and the Israeli-occupied West Bank. And we'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about that with Joe. We'll be playing something from Radio Israel, Israeli radio, Kol Israel, they call it. Joe, you're here. You're here a lot sooner than I thought you would be. Looks like you ran all the way here.
We had a radar detector.
Well, you don't have to reveal those things on the air. We are in the airwaves now.
Hi.
If you push that little thing in there,
yeah,
you'll miraculously hear yourself through those headphones. And it took me a good 20 minutes to figure out that. But I did it.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als mich.
Now, this thing here,
yeah,
that's your microphone.
Thank you.
Just move it over there. Don't worry, it's turned off, so it won't make any noise.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Joe Evangelista has just arrived, rather unexpectedly, in our studios. And I'm very happy to see him here, because, you were stuck out in where? Spionk, of all places? Where is Spionk? I apologize for all listeners in Spionk, not knowing where. I know it's out east someplace, but I don't know exactly.
It's just south of Berlin.
Ah.
So we had a little trouble at the border crossing.
I see. Well, I'm awfully glad to see you here, and welcome. Welcome to Brain Damage.
Thank you, Eric.
We've been waiting for you here.
Great.
Well,
good to be here.
As I was telling the folks, we are going to be talking about the MIDI situation, the whole messy situation over there, looking at some articles in various newspapers, and what we have now, especially for you, is something that we got off Israeli radio today. In fact, it was taped off Israeli radio. It's an interview. And we'll want to get to that in just a moment. First, I want to update the news here.
Okay.
And, of course, the news is always interesting. Let's see now. Latest news. When Congress gets back to work next week, President Reagan will be fighting on two major policy fronts.
I would like to dispute that.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't think that Congress ever gets to work.
Well, they may think they're getting back to work, but we know better here.
Maybe they're voting on a pay increase.
That'd be nice.
At our expense, sure. Nice for them.
Reagan states his views on continued Contra aid in no uncertain terms.
Good.
He says, "Phooey" to those who argue. Now, he said "phooey." Now, let's see if we can get that. I'd like to actually get that on the air, President Reagan saying "phooey." I happen to know a phone number where you can hear the speech that he made today. Let's see if that number's still busy.
Is this another one of your pasted-up speeches, Eric?
No, this is the number. This is the White House press service that they operate themselves, but it's busy a lot of the time. Let's see if we can get through, though.
Okay.
No, it's still busy. We're going to keep trying that, though.
Maybe you could dial the number for TASS Radio. The TASS have an information bureau in New York, don't they?
They do have a phone number in New York, but I don't think they have a recorded announcement service. Not yet. But we will try to get you that phooey, because I do want to hear that myself. Getting back to that story, though, Reagan states his views on continued Contra aid in no uncertain terms. He says, "phooey," in quotes, "phooey," with a PH, to those who argue that aid to the Nicaraguan rebels disrupts the Central American peace process. In his radio address today, Reagan said he'll ask for another round of Contra funding when he makes his State of the Union address Monday. Reagan contends Congress could be voting on security of the Western Hemisphere when the decision is made on funding the Contras. Let's try once again for that phooey.
Excuse me.
And, yeah.
Eric,
Jim Weider, yes.
Do you think possibly the number might be 1-800-CALL-TASS or anything like that?
Do you want to try that in the other room? I mean,
well,
sometimes
know.
The most obvious things...
No, I think it's 1-800-RED-PHONE.
We have a red phone somewhere around here. I've seen it.
If there's not a red phone on a college campus, you don't know where there's going to be one.
Well, let's try the phooey hotline again, see if it's still busy. It's me, Beth. Why did she hold that up?
That's for
you. Okay. Still busy. I wonder why it's so busy. I guess everyone wants to hear this. Every radio station in the country must be calling this hotline to hear President Reagan say phooey. You know?
I suppose.
What's the number for the White House? 202-456-1414?
Actually, that sounds right. The 1414 sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, if worst comes to worst, we'll call them and ask them to verify the fact of President Reagan saying phooey today.
They have a 24-hour number?
Of course, 24-hour. The White House never closes.
You have to have another number.
Oh, it's like a church.
1-800-CALL-PREXY or something like that.
Yeah. The White House is like a church. Anytime you want to go in and pray, they encourage it, in fact. Well, anyway, so he did say phooey. I'd like to get past this point.
Please do.
In his radio address, Congressman Lee Hamilton isn't convinced by Reagan's argument. He said a much nastier word, in fact. I'm just adding that in, but he could have. He could very well have. He's been known to do that kind of thing before. In the Democrats' weekly radio talk, the Indiana lawmaker contended that a vote for Contra aid is a vote for more war. Hamilton says... Hamilton... try to keep it down. Hamilton says continued funding for the rebels would wreck prospects for peace in the region.
God. It would wreck prospects for slavery in the region.
I can't help but notice that you're breaking in on a newscast here, and we are trying to get through this news because we do have the Radio Israel thing. Let's try the phooey hotline one more time and see if we...
I'd just like to say, while Eric is dialing this number, that...
I'm not dialing. The phone is dialing.
Oh.
I programmed it to do
did
that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Technology is wonderful. A vote against the Contras is a vote against human freedom.
Still busy.
And a vote to worsen the human condition.
Now, if you'd like to comment on the statements that you're hearing us make tonight, feel free to call us at 632-6901. We will be taking phone calls later on in the program. And let's finish with the news, and we'll try to hear President Reagan say phooey. If we can't do that, we'll just go into the Israeli radio tape. And I'd like you, Joe, to listen to this, and I'd like our listeners to listen to this, obviously.
Eric, we've located Spionk.
You found Spionk. Where is it?
It's just east of Eastport.
Eastport?
Right.
Boy, do I feel ignorant tonight. Where's Eastport?
Eastport is...
east of Northport, no doubt.
Exit 70. Exit 70 off the...
I didn't know it went that high.
Off the Berliner Ring.
Oh, boy. Off the Autobahn, huh?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, on the Senate side of Capitol Hill, lawmakers are set to take up the recent arms treaty with the Soviets. Key committee hearings begin Monday on the pact, which bans short- and medium-range nuclear missiles. President Reagan today said the deal is a good one for the nation's security and added, phooey, again.
It's just west of West
Hampton. West of West Hampton?
It's also due south of Westport, in one way or another.
That's true, it is. Westport's in Connecticut, though.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Arnie. Thank you, Jim.
Unfortunately, our listeners know nothing of these small towns. I'll have to tell them that it's just west of West Hampton.
Now, you see, Joe, a lot of our listeners live in small towns. In fact, a lot of our listeners are irately proud of their small towns.
A lot of them probably don't give a bloody damn about the other
small towns. A lot of them have pickup trucks and shotguns and all that kind of stuff, you know.
They live in Florida?
But we like these people. They're very friendly, and they're our friends. Our very special friends. Let's try the Reagan hotline one more time.
Okay. And while you're doing that, I would just like to say that I'll support slowing aid to the Contras as long as you agree to support... I was going to say something and I lost it. I think I'm suffering from your brain damage finally,
It's catching. Eric. It's catching. However,
it had something to do with protesting Soviet domination of a land so close to us.
Well, now let's continue with the news here because we're almost finished with it. However, Reagan's facing some staunch opposition to the accord spearheaded by conservative Jesse Helms of North Carolina.
He's only in it for the tobacco interests.
Sing hallelujah. Today, Helms circulated a memo among his GOP Senate colleagues listing what he says are more than 200 loopholes in the pact. 200. Must be a really silly-looking pack.
That's one for every 10 Pershing A1s that are being thrown out in West Germany.
Have you ever seen a loophole?
I know, but I've seen a Pershing A1, and it's a damn fine missile, Eric.
Well, did you bring one with you?
Eric, you know I have one. I have one. That's why I'm looking for a rear-engine car. I want to mount one.
Well, if anyone can help Joe here, feel free to give us a call, and we'll talk about it after the show. In addition, a Helms aide says the senator has asked the CIA to investigate allegations the Soviets have already violated the agreement.
No, are you kidding?
GOP presidential contender Pat Robertson today sounded the themes of God and family to a responsive Arkansas crowd. The former TV preacher says he'll restore America's moral values and would bring God back to public schools if elected. Why did God leave public schools?
I think he was disenchanted and he went to private schools. He was disenchanted with organized crime as reflected in the janitors union in New York City schools.
Mm. But this is Arkansas we're talking about here.
Well, yes, but God got out of schools in general because of what's going on in labor unions.
Well, God's like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
He's
got to
play
him.
Along. You
don't
know?
Blame him, frankly. Unions are a pretty ungodly thing.
Well, they took a straw poll, and it was taken at the rally, and it showed Robertson far ahead of second place Bob Dole. In fact, he's in close contention with God himself.
A straw poll?
Did
they make a straw man argument about it also? I think they did.
Let's see. Now we're going to try it one more time. We are going to try to hear President Reagan say for you.
Remember, a vote against the Contras is a vote against human freedom and dignity. I want you to remember that. Are we getting through it?
We can get you on tape saying that and just keep playing it.
It's okay. Yeah.
Save you the effort. It's still busy. You know, everyone in the country must be calling this thing now.
All our listeners, they can pick us up on shortwave.
A convention of Hispanic Democrats expressed support today for presidential hopeful Michael Dukakis, but the Massachusetts governor failed to get the three-quarters majority needed to win endorsement from the Mexican-American Democrats. Interesting. MAD, I guess they call themselves.
Marianne Devine.
Yeah. Arizona Governor Evan Meacham wants help with a myriad of political and legal problems, saying he's not ashamed. Meacham today asked listeners of a Phoenix radio station known as KTAR to contribute to his legal defense fund.
KTAR. That competes against KFeather.
Certainly does. Sometimes they do joint ventures. Meacham faces the triple threat of criminal prosecution, impeachment, and a possible recall election.
Oh, he could run for president.
Oh, yeah.
He could be Gary Hart's running mate.
He's fully qualified now. Let's try it one more time, and then we'll just be forced not to do it anymore. That's just the way it is. Let's see if we can get through to President Reagan saying phooey in his...
How do you know it's even on there?
Well, you see, today's Saturday. He made the speech today, and they usually hold the speeches there for a full day. It's still busy. Well, let's just try asking the White House themselves, assuming I remember the number.
Asking the White House itself.
That's true. Well, no, I'll talk to a nice operator there, and hopefully they'll...
He or she will.
I've never gotten a he.
Okay, then hopefully she wouldn't be they, unless it's a few of them.
Yeah. Oh, let's find out. Hopefully this is the right number. Hello, is this the White House?
Yes,
hi. I'm calling from WUSB Radio up in New York, Long Island, New York. We're trying to ascertain whether or not President Reagan said phooey in his speech today. Can you tell me if he did?
Whether he did what? Said what?
He said the word phooey, P-H-O-O-E-Y, I believe.
I can have the press duty person call you. May I have your name, please?
Okay, this is Eric Corley.
Just a moment, please.
Okay. I've been put on executive hold.
Sounds like a board game.
It's very much like a board game, yes. They should know. You know, they should know these things at the White House. Did the president say phooey, didn't he? That sounded like they disconnected, didn't it?
I couldn't blame them for doing so.
Clicking a lot.
It's just the wiretaps, Eric. I mean,
do you think it is? It could be.
Don't you know a call to the White House is a call to TASS? Or actually a call to the KGB? It's the same thing.
Maybe I should hang up. They did hang up on me. How do you like that, folks? The White House hung up not just on me. The White House
hung up on the KGB as well.
They hung up on all of us listening. Every one of you out there listening. The White House just hung up. Whether by incompetence or by deliberate malice, the White House has hung up. Think about it.
I honestly can't blame them, Eric.
Okay, well, enough of that. Enough. Let's just try it one more time, though, just to be fair.
The White House?
No, let's just try seeing if we can hear him say phooey. And this, I promise, will be the last time.
Okay.
Unless we decide to do it again.
I hear...
Awfully loud hum on the line there.
It's they don't know the words.
Okay, it's busy. It's real busy. I think he's just embarrassed and he left the phone off the hook.
Possibly.
I mean, Eisenhower never said phooey.
Eisenhower didn't say much at all.
Well, he said cotton picking once.
Did he?
But that was all. Now,
I think Eisenhower said, "What's this big white building?"
He's been known to say things like that. We are going to be talking about rather serious things in this program, particularly the things going on the West Bank, in Israel, the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And what we have today is something rather interesting, taped this evening off the shortwave radio from Call Israel, which is the Israeli Broadcasting International Service. And we'll hear a wrap-up of the news and an interview with Yitzhak Shamir, which is quite revealing. And then we'll be back here to take your phone calls to talk to Joe and myself about their views of what's going on over there, and it's of interest. You may say to yourself, oh, no, they're going to talk about the West Bank, about Israel and the Arabs and everything. How boring. Well, the thing is, I don't think it's boring. I've been reading the newspapers, and once you start reading newspapers and watching the news reports and seeing what's actually going on there, you begin to realize these are human beings, too. And
human beings? What do you mean?
Everyone over there. I mean, we think of them as just that part of the world, right? But they are human beings very much like us,
mm-hmm,
in all forms. And there's a conflict going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And like it or not, these are our brothers and sisters, Israelis, Arabs, South Africans. Well, they're not involved this time. But just about every conflict in the world you can look upon in that way. And I think we should, because...
I'm not sure I follow that. You mean every conflict can be looked upon as what? As what?
Well, it can be looked upon in two ways. It can be looked upon as just a news item, or it can be looked upon as something happening with people like you or me.
Okay.
You see,
okay.
And when we look upon it in that way, we say, hey, this is bad, and this is good, and this is what we can do, and this is what should be done, and that kind of thing. So let's listen to the newscast and the interview, and then we'll come back, and the folks out there can give us a call, tell us what they think, and... Joe, you can tell us what you think, and
okay.
I might even have some thoughts on the matter, too.
Okay, that's fine.
So we're going to go right into that Radio Israel thing again, taped this past evening, just tonight, in fact. And what we hear underneath us now is the signal that Israeli radio uses when they are signing on to the airwaves. So in a moment, we will hear the newscast, and then we will hear an interview, and we'll be back here.
Thank you. This is Israel.
You are tuned to the external service of Israel Radio, Kol Yisrael, broadcasting from Jerusalem. The time is 22:30 UTC, 12:30 a.m. in Israel. Listeners in Europe and North America can hear us on 11655, 9845, 9435, 9010, 7460, and 7355 kilohertz. In tonight's program, Spotlight, our weekly roundup on people and events after the news from Jerusalem. Shalom Aleichem, good evening, and Shavua Tov, a pleasant week. Now here's the news read by Yosef Yaakov. First, the headlines. American Jewish leaders are to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Shamir on Sunday to convey a message from Jordan's King Hussein and Egyptian President Mubarak. An unprecedented curfew imposed in an East Jerusalem neighborhood is lifted after 24 hours. West German Foreign Minister Genscher arrives in Israel. Now the news in full. American Jewish leaders are in Israel with a message from King Hussein and Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak for Prime Minister Shamir. American Jewish Congress Executive Director Henry Sigman says there are specific proposals, but said he would not go into details until after his meeting Sunday with Prime Minister Shamir and Foreign Minister Peres. He said his delegation had been very warmly received in both Amman and Cairo, and that both Hussein and Mubarak believe there could be progress towards peace before the upcoming elections in Israel and the United States. Earlier, the chairman of the Conference of Presidents of American Jewish Organizations, Morris Abraham, phoned the defense minister to express sharp criticism of Israeli policy on the territories and of some of Mr. Rabin's recent statements. Abraham said he was shocked at the policy of physical confrontation, and he said that while it was not his business to tell the defense minister what to do, American Jewish communities would no longer be in a position to defend Israeli policy. There were no reports of disturbances in the territories Saturday, although there were a number of incidents in Jerusalem. In one of the incidents in the Al-Ata refugee camp, the police made two arrests. In East Jerusalem, there was a partial commercial strike. The police broke up a small demonstration with tear gas just outside Herod's Gate in the Old City. The demonstrators carried a PLO flag. Two of them were arrested. The curfew in the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Attor was lifted Saturday evening. Earlier, the police arrested four residents on suspicion of participating in the recent wave of disturbances. All male residents of Attur were taken from their homes to a local school for interrogation and identification of suspects. Mayor Teddy Kollek, who was critical of the curfew decision implemented on Friday night, spoke to village notables and told them that ultimately the disturbances only hurt the villagers themselves. The notables said they were unable to control the young stone throwers. Mayor Kollek said he was unhappy about not being consulted before the curfew was imposed. He said he thought it was unnecessary to resort to measures that have not been needed in the capital for 20 years. Knesset member Abdul Wahab Daroshe says he's leaving the Labour Party in protest at Defense Minister Rabin's policy in the territories. At a rally in Nazareth, he called on all Arab members of the party to follow his example. Several members of the Labour Party have called for Daroshe to withdraw his resignation from the party. Knesset member Shevach Weiss said that as an Arab moderate, Daroshe's services are needed by the party to advance peace and reach an agreement on the future of the territories. The head of the party's minority section, Yoram Katz, said he was not surprised by the announcement. He added that for some time now, Daroshe had expressed views that were in contradiction to those of the Labour Party. The West German Foreign Minister, Hans-Dietrich Genscher, has arrived in Israel for a one-day visit. He's to be the guest of Foreign Minister Shimon Peres. On Sunday, he meets with Jerusalem Mayor Kollek, Knesset Speaker Hillel, and Prime Minister Shamir. West German Foreign Minister is also scheduled to meet with Palestinian notables. And that's the end of the news. Once again, the main points. American Jewish leaders are to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Shamir on Sunday to convey a message from Jordan's King Hussein and Egyptian President Mubarak. In an unprecedented curfew, which was imposed in an East Jerusalem neighborhood, It was lifted after 24 hours. West German Foreign Minister Genscher arrives in Israel. This is Israel Radio, Kol Israel, broadcasting from Jerusalem.
The situation in the territories. The army adopts a new get-tough policy, not live ammunition, but playing into Arab rioters and demonstrators. Some curfews are lifted, others are imposed for disturbances. On the international scene, the United Nations and the Soviet Union step up pressure for an international conference. Today we'll be talking with Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir on these latest events, and also today, what could be a new development. A delegation from the American Jewish Congress has just arrived in Jerusalem with a message from Shamir, from Jordan's King Hussein, and Egypt's President Mubarak. Welcome to Spotlight. This is David Essing reporting.
I would like to see a certain return to normal life. Because I hope that more and more people among the inhabitants of the territories of Gaza and Samaria and Judea understand now that by violence they will not get anywhere.
Prime Minister Shamir.
And all this violence is useless, and it brings only suffering and victims.
We've seen in the past few days a new Israeli policy, literally a carrot and stick policy. Are you not concerned, sir, that this is causing major damage to Israel's image, primarily in the United States?
Israel tries all the time not to bring to the death of among the demonstrators, to avoid bloodshed. But we are facing a very difficult situation when all these rioters know that by rubber bullets, by tear gas, they are not out. And these means are not deterring. Therefore, the Israeli army, the Israeli security forces have to look for other means that deter and not kill. I have sometimes the impression that for us it's all right to be killed, to be wounded. But it's not all right when we defend ourselves and when we protect the security of our country.
But this is not what Israeli soldiers have been trained for. They've been trained to defend the country in regular warfare and so forth. What can you tell Israeli soldiers who have to face this kind of task today, to fulfill this kind of duty, to fulfill the orders they're being given?
It's true that our soldiers are trained for other purposes and for other missions. But now they are facing, and we are facing, this new form of warfare against our country. And it endangers the country, not only the security of the country, also the existence of the country, not less than the former means. And we have to find the means to protect ourselves against these attempts to endanger our existence. And I am sure that our soldiers understand it. And they do it.
On the political level, the Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze has appealed to the UN to convene the Security Council to decide upon a preparatory conference leading to an international conference. Mr. Shamir, what is your reaction to this Soviet appeal?
Well, it's not surprising. This is the Soviet policy. This proposal the Soviet proposal seems a long date, and they try to make the best of it. They do it for propaganda aspirations, and well, anybody of us knows that it is against our interests. We have to defend ourselves against that. And I hope that other members of the United Nations will oppose also this Soviet new attempt.
But the fact that the Soviets are now allowing an Israeli delegation to come to Moscow, you don't see this as a shift, a softening in Soviet policy toward Israel?
Well, I think that this new move of the Soviet diplomacy is a positive one, but we don't have to exaggerate the importance of it. After all, we have permitted the Soviet diplomatic delegations to come to Israel for a long time without any reciprocity. And I think it's more than reasonable that the Soviets have to permit our people to send such a delegation to the Soviet,
But not only the Soviet Union, Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak is also approaching the UN Security Council, also calling for an international conference, and he's talking about a new peace plan. How do you react to that?
Well, I don't know what is the new peace plan of Mubarak, of President Mubarak, and his position there supporting the idea of an international conference is well known. It's not new. All the Arab countries prefer this international conference on direct negotiations, what we want and what we propose.
Also Western Europe. The Western European countries are also talking about an international conference. They're even imposing sanctions, economic sanctions on Israel over what's been happening on the territories. Is there not a danger of some kind of international political steamroller now facing Israel with regard to the international conference?
It's not surprising for us. The European position about an international conference is also well known. And we know the European positions since the announcement of the Venice Declaration. We have different positions all the time. And in spite of it, we had with Europe friendly relations. And we have maintained, we still maintain a permanent dialogue with the European community. And we try to convince each other. And about the positions, the various positions and the situation in the United Nations, it's not very encouraging, but we know since a long time that we are always in a very slim minority in the United Nations. To negotiate with all our partners and with anybody of them. And we have expressed it all the time. That is the difference between us and the Arab parties. We are ready always to negotiate even without any preconditions. The Arabs, they reject all the time our readiness to negotiate and our proposals to negotiate.
But hasn't Hussein told Shimon Peres that he's not Sadat, that he can't go it alone the way that Sadat went? Maybe he told it for you, to you, for all I know. What's in it for Hussein? Does he not need this umbrella to protect him from the rest of the Arab world, from the Soviet Union, from Syria?
Yeah, I know very well this, Kelly. If somebody really wants to have peace, he has to be ready to come to negotiations. We have said many times we are ready to negotiate with all the Arab neighbors of us, together or separately. But we don't think that an international conference could contribute something to getting peace. Our conflict is not with the Soviet Union, not with China, not with Britain. We have a conflict with the Arab world, the Arab neighbors of us, and therefore we have to negotiate with them.
But if Hussein, someone's listening to this broadcast now in Amman, if he were to come out and say unequivocally in public that he is willing to meet with you in direct negotiations, within the framework, some kind of international framework, you would still not accept this?
Not a framework. What the Soviets want, what the Arab wants, is a real conference in which the fate of our area will be decided. That's what they want. For every Arab, for every European who supports this idea, it's clear that getting an international conference is identical with the Palestinian state and with the withdrawal of all the Israeli forces from all the territories controlled by us.
You reported that they're sending envoys, or envoys have been going to Amman and reporting back to you after meeting with Jordanian officials. Has there been any change in recent days in Hussein's position?
We are making efforts all the times to make some progress, to get some progress in the peace process we would want to go on. But unfortunately, until now, there is not any change in the Arab intransigent positions.
And what about Washington's position? The foreign ministry official, Yossi Beilin, was there. He says that now the Middle East is higher on the American agenda. They're going to get involved. How do you react to that, Mr. Prime Minister?
I have not to rely on some officials of our foreign ministry in order to know what are the positions of the United States government. I am in touch, in constant touch, with the American government. And as I understand, the United States government has a deep understanding for our positions.
Finally, coming closer to home, there's an increasing demand from your critics for early elections. They say that what you're interested in is to sit tight, to maintain the status quo, and this is not the time to do this, particularly with the situation in the territories.
Well, it's not true. I don't think this is the position of my critics. This is the position of the Labour Party. I don't know of a part of the Labour Party, not of all of them. And we are going to have elections. We will have elections in a few months, according to our law. I don't see any necessity to have early elections at this time when we are involved in a confrontation, in a bitter confrontation with our rivals and enemies. And I don't think that this is the most appropriate time to have these election clashes and confrontations. And therefore, I prefer to have these elections at due time. And, about the status quo, I said it many times. I am not a great believer in status quo, because status quo is not peace. We want to have a formal peace with all our neighbors. And I still believe that thanks to our efforts, and with God's help, we will get it.
But isn't reasonable, proper government built on consensus? And this consensus does not exist today between the Labour and the Likud party. And with regard to the people, nobody really knows what the people of Israel think about what should be done now in light of the violence in the territories.
We have a large consensus on many issues. And the only difference that exists is on the issue of an international conference. There is no any disagreement inside the government about the way to handle these riots in the territories of Gaza and Samaria and Judea. Therefore, I don't see any reason for immediate election.
Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir interviewed yesterday in Jerusalem. Well, since then, a delegation of the American Jewish Congress has crossed the Allenby Bridge from Jordan and is now in Jerusalem. The delegation met with King Hussein in Amman and Egypt's President Mubarak in Cairo. Henry Sigman, the AGC's executive director, says they are bringing a message to Shamir from Hussein and Mubarak. Sigman says...
All right, I think we've heard just about enough of that. That was an interview from Israel Radio, Call Israel, taped today. We were quite lucky to get that, in fact. That was an interview with Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir about the problems on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, things going on today. And just as an update, what has most recently come over our wire, Israel's crackdown on Palestinians was protested today by both Israelis and Arabs. As many as 70,000 Israelis carried torches and banners in Tel Aviv in a demonstration organized by the leftist Peace Now group. American poet Allen Ginsberg received the loudest applause. That's where he is. That's interesting. When he read a poem critical of the role the Muslim and Jewish religions have played in the Mideast conflict, the protest was Israel's largest ever against the occupation of the Gaza Strip and West Bank. Israeli policies in the occupied lands were denounced today by about 30,000 Arabs. The protesters who gathered in the northern Israeli town of Nazareth shouted, "We want the PLO and Israeli army, get out." Hundreds of police stood by but did not interfere with the demonstration. All right. Now, it's time for us to say what's on our minds and to invite our listeners to say what's on their minds regarding this entire messy affair. Our telephone number is 632-6901, area code 516. The program is Brain Damage, and we're here tonight with Joe Evangelista, who does a program here on USB. And Joe, well, why don't I ask you, first of all, to give any comments you might have on this whole thing, and then hopefully we can find something to disagree on and and take it from there.
All right, I'm not sure how you feel about this yet, so...
I'm not either, but
okay,
we'll have a better feeling for it in a little few minutes.
I'll just make two opinions right now. We can see if we can find a bone of contention.
Okay.
Weapons against the demonstrators. This is a perfectly justifiable and necessary action. When he says that they're using weapons to defend themselves, I'm absolutely certain that in those instances they really are. These are the demonstrators against whom they're using, let's say, bullets, for example, are demonstrators who are probably wielding bombs. And it's a military action. I mean, these demonstrations are no doubt, in many cases, a military type of action. Now, you heard recently, as you read, the last item you read, there's a demonstration where people are shouting their nonsensical statements, and the police didn't make any aggressive move, mainly because they probably were using their voices and carrying banners, with the essence of a assembly, that's a cornerstone of freedom, to use a cliche. That's fine. It's what the Prime Minister was talking about, is when there's an actual threat, they shouldn't rely on mere gas and British-made rubber bullets. That's the first point. So I think their use of force is justified. Their presence in the strip is certainly justified.
Why is that?
It belongs to them now. They want it, as far as we can see. Anybody that takes a hostile action, any country, any political entity that takes a hostile action against another, is risking a certain amount of territory. It's been that way forever. I mean, is it cold-blooded? No. It's just, yes, they belong there. It's theirs now. They're living in a hostile environment. I mean, I question...
Who's living in a hostile environment?
The Israeli state is in an extremely hostile environment.
How about
the Palestinians? I should be allowed to finish the point before we go on. I do question the justification for the formation of the Israeli state, but it's there. It's there like so many of political entities in this world. It has to be accepted. We can't take it away from them. All right? And since it's there, they have the right now to defend it. We as the free world gave it to them, and they can be expected to defend what is their home. So they have every right not only to defend their home, but to take whatever they can get after they've won defending their home. And they win every time. And that's what the Soviets and the Arabs hate about the Jews, is that they keep winning.
Now,
and that's what the world hates about them. I mean, I don't like to come out like a Zionist. I'm trying to be just a regular American with an opinion. But it's just that they keep winning, and that seems to be what people hate the most.
See, I have a problem when you say something like the Jews win every time, because I'm seeing more and more of a difference being drawn here between the Israeli nation and the Jewish people. The Jewish people just seem completely apart from this somehow in history.
No.
The Jewish people have always seen dictatorship as victims, and now they're starting to see it as the dictators themselves.
The reason, well,
and
the
that
reason
really bothers me.
The reason they've seen dictatorship as a victim is because they're a dispersed people. And as a dispersed people, that's what has happened, I mean, historically. So the question is as to what, you know, we're borderline on another discussion, which we're not really part of, which is something for another time. When you talk about a history of the Jews and maybe a Jewish attitude, that's something that we really, if we start discussing that, we'll certainly get away from their presence in the Gaza Strip and their defending themselves as a nation. But even looking historically, and I'm sure, I mean, I'm not Jewish, and none of us here, none of the three of us are, but from what I observe, that there is a feeling of unity among American Jews, and I guess American Jews are certainly the greatest concentration of Jews in any country outside of Israel. So between American Jews and Israeli Jews, I don't think they feel the physical distance as really very important.
At what point, though, does this unity turn into blind faith?
Blind faith? How do you mean?
I mean, following a policy that is starting to become completely barbaric.
How do you mean?
Well, I'm talking about this public policy of beating people and gloating about it. I've never seen this before.
I doubt whether...
Beating 12 and 14-year-olds
uh-huh.
who are walking through the streets. And I wish I could show this picture on the air, but...
It's okay, let me tell me what you...
These are your terrorists. These kids here walking through the street on their way to school that... that are being shot at.
To your studio audience.
By the way, we have our friend here.
From Spionk.
Our friend Frank Kraczynski from Spionk will render opinions as needed. Tell me what the essence of this article is. It's from the it's from Newsday. Oh, a reliable newspaper.
Well, now what do you consider a reliable newspaper?
It's hard to say. The Herald Tribune's been out of business for 20 years.
Well, we're going to have to find some common denominator here.
It's okay. That was just
I don't agree with
sneer at Newsday.
Well, I like to sneer at Newsday too. I like to sneer at the New York Times.
Tell me what the essence of the article is.
Okay, I think if you read the headline out loud, you'll get the full
Reagan
essence. The headline for that article.
Israel denies attack captured on TV film. Palestinian children...
Israel denies an attack that was captured on film.
Yes, but what is it? Is it
was an attack with Israelis...
revered mosques in Jerusalem.
They threw tear gas canisters into the mosques and denied that they did it. And it was captured by the CBC on film,
mm-hmm.
clearly.
Canadian Broadcasting Corp. In case...
Yeah. I don't mean to spring that on you, you know, as a surprise.
That's okay, let's see. Now, oh, by the way, I should say, I don't think these people are walking around in white sheets and totally blameless and only responding to aggressive action. I don't know what goes on. I'm at a loss for words to say that it's just, okay, these people are at war and this may be what happens in war. I'm sure this has happened in every war. I mean, yeah, it sounds barbaric. It sounds barbaric to say that they fired tear gas into a mosque. But let me tell you, I don't know what was going on in the mosque. So I can't say, I mean, you know, I don't exactly
trust... Well, what could have been going on in the mosque that would pose a threat to Israeli soldiers outside the mosque?
Well, churches in Ireland have been known to stock weapons.
Yeah, but you wonder why they denied it instead of explaining it.
That's true. That's what I don't know. What organ... All right, the questions here are, first, what organ denied the attack? Was it a political entity inside Israel that opposes the current government?
I believe it was the official view of the government that that did not happen.
We believe it, but let's just say, let's see, who... The Israeli cabinet yesterday declined the declared that news reports that tear gas grenades... It sounds... Okay, it sounds that it's the voice of the party in power.
Now, if there's one...
I don't know why they didn't explain it.
There's one positive thing I can point to.
Yeah.
The report that we just heard from Israeli radio seemed to be fairly non-biased in the way they were asking questions of the prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is essential to have something that... A form of communication that is not necessarily a propaganda tool. That is the one hope. If I didn't see that, there would be no hope. If I didn't see people demonstrating about this.
Okay, well, since we're talking about this, why don't you give your reaction to what?
Well, I think I pretty much have expressed my outrage here.
I'm not sure where you stand on the issue. I mean, remember, these people are at war. And yeah, right. There's this one incident. Barbarism happens when people are fighting.
No, I'm not sure.
Barbarism is unavoidable.
I'm not sure I actually see a quote-unquote war here. I mean, there have been terrorist acts in the past by the PLO. I don't see terrorist acts here by the PLO. I see a bunch of school kids throwing rocks at an occupying force, much like Northern Ireland. And what is it that...
Well, the response simply
does not seem appropriate.
We remember busloads of Israeli kids that have been killed by Palestinian attacks. And we must view this in perspective.
You see, the majority of the Palestinians, at least the way I see it, don't view the PLO as their voice. At least not these kids. These kids are disenchanted because nothing has been accomplished.
Wait a second, Eric. You're giving them an opinion here that we don't know anything. I mean, you can't give them this statement that says that they're saying, "Well, my goodness, we're disenchanted." I mean, first of all, they're 14 years old. They only know what they're told. And a large part of these people, maybe they're ignorant tools of Soviet propaganda. I mean, it's quite possible. It's certainly possible.
How did the Soviet propaganda get to the Palestinians who are kept in these prison-like camps for their entire lifetimes?
Eric, I think we know better than to ask a question like that. When the Soviets can infiltrate the State Department of the United States, almost up to the Secretary of State himself, they can get anywhere.
Well, I'd like to go to this article in the New York Times, which was in yesterday's Times, and at the same time give out our phone number one more time, 632-6901, if you have an opinion on this, which, come on, I mean, our listeners must have some opinion on this. 632...
Maybe they're just enjoying the fight.
What fight? Oh, our fight. I thought there was a fight on TV tonight or something.
There might be.
I hate it.
That was last night.
That was last night. Thank you.
They're watching the videotape.
Holmes lost.
632-6901, area code 516. I'd like to hear what people have to say, and if people don't have anything to say, then that is something to say in itself. And that's not a very good thing to say. I think we can agree on that.
I think we can agree on that, too.
It's good to take a stand.
Although it's not necessarily so that they have nothing to say. They might just be waiting to see what we've got to conclude here.
That's true.
So the conclusion I have reached at this point is that the use of force is perfectly justifiable in certain instances, and they should not rely on less harmful weapons than they deem necessary. After all, it is their fight.
All right, let me get into this article and see if I can perhaps...
Well, go ahead, just shake your head. Say something.
You have something to say?
Well, I just think that the opinion that you're expressing is not a very constructive policy. I think it's certainly okay to say, well, they won this territory fair and square.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you cannot totally ignore the wishes of the people that have been living in that territory all their lives and that are all of a sudden subject to being governed by a foreign power, because, well, you may think it's your right to do that, but then you can expect trouble and you can be expected to be criticized by the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But then these people, have they been taken in by the surrounding countries with open arms after having been displaced?
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not. And there's no country in the world that has accepted these people, the Palestinians.
So it's not just a Jewish problem.
No.
It's almost as if it's a concert. concerted effort on the part of the Arab states to foment trouble, well, using these poor people as victims.
Even if that is
some
so.
Some of them are blameless victims. Most of them are probably not. But
even if that is so, the poor people are still victims.
Yes.
And Israel is doing nothing to help that. And that's...
Well, now, wait a second. I'm unfortunately uninformed as to what their efforts they might have been making in the past to it creaks when you do that you can let go and let's get one big creak. Okay, I'll lean forward. What efforts they might have been making to peacefully coexist, to use a very bad cliche, with these people. Okay, I don't know what they've been doing, because any attempts they've been making have probably greatly overshadowed by the fighting that's been going on since 1948. And I don't think they've had a week of peace, really. So I don't know what social program they could possibly institute that we could say we recognize as a definite step forward. They may not have had a chance in all this time to do something really constructive and really socially useful, because of the aggression, because of what may be insidious propaganda among the Palestinians that are there, that the free so-called free world came in and took your land away and made a so-called safe state for these people who claim that they have a right to it. You know, it's just such an issue of that nature, and we don't know what these have been told.
All right, let me first of all say it's 4 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is WUSB Stony Brook, and we're talking about the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and that whole mess over there.
I'd like to say you must call within the next half hour. You know, the train's 11:52. It's the last one till 5:15.
What train?
Behind my train home.
You have to leave before the show's over?
Unfortunately.
Well, that's a lousy thing to do.
No, but Frank will be here. He'll carry on the fight.
But I won't be able to argue with him. I think he agrees with me. But we'll try to...
I'll have to change my mind.
Okay,
yes.
We'll try to change
his
mind.
Frank knows how I feel, pretty much inside and out. We're good friends.
Yeah, let's get some calls in. This is embarrassing us if our audience doesn't even care about these people dying and fighting and all that kind of stuff.
It's a very interesting issue.
I'd like
I'm sorry, you want to say something
else?
Well,
I'd like to ask you a question.
Me?
Okay, yes. This whole Israeli West Bank thing,
mm-hmm.
How is it different from South Africa?
South Africa? I think... do you really want to talk about South Africa?
No, I don't want to talk about South Africa. I want to know how this is different from South Africa. That's all.
The only really bad people that I see in South Africa are the Afrikaners. And because there are a majority of white South Africans really would like to live in peace. Second of all, we're doing a very bad thing by getting out of South Africa. There's this whole great propaganda move against South Africa. It's this insidious propaganda in our everyday lives by some creeping great... probably Soviet-sponsored, very indirectly, Soviet-sponsored news blanket. Because, first of all, South Africa is a great source of metal, especially gold. Now, the Soviets know this, and they know that this is the West. This is the West's, well, it's the last cornerstone of anything closely resembling democracy. Look at what happens look what happened to the other South.
What?
Well, look closely. You know, I don't say closely. I'm trying to get to another point. You're right, Frank. I shouldn't say closely. It is remotely associated with anything that can be regarded as free. Because look what happened when the other African nations were quote-unquote liberated. They became communist slave states. The people are starving. The people aren't starving in Ethiopia because there's no food. They're starving because the communist leaders are keeping the food from them. You know, it's an effort to... I don't know. I can't imagine what the purpose is.
Let's try not to bring
South Africa into this, is what I'm saying. Please, we'll do that another show.
Well, the only reason I'm bringing South Africa into this is because I see a group of people holding a large mass...
I'll tell you what it's no different than. It's no different than the goddamn Soviets in the East Europe. That's what, if you want to say anything. If you maintain that the Israelis don't belong in the Gaza Strip... Then I would like to hear you personally say that you think that East Europe is Soviet-occupied territory. I'd like to hear you and people who deny that.
I don't see people in East Europe getting shot daily.
Of course you don't! Wait, what do you think the word Iron Curtain means, Eric? Maybe you didn't see Prague in 1968 or Hungary in 1956. I know I didn't. But people are shot on the street when they're buying
today,
bread.
Are they shot on the street today?
We wouldn't know. We wouldn't know.
I don't know about that.
I doubt if they were shot on the street today. Now they're done. Now it's done with high-tech weapons. Well, silencers, back alleys, cars at midnight. It's all there, and it's all true.
Eric, I'll tell you.
I think if there was a massacre of sorts going on in Eastern Europe, we would hear about it.
They just wipe a damn town off the map. They just pluck it off the map. It's no longer there. Come on, Eric.
They really are the evil empire, aren't they?
Eric, it's true. It's true. Go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
But well, Eric, somebody please call. 632-69. I just
want to
hit some
of the... I don't want them to call right now.
Joe does not want you to call.
Studio audience.
632-6901.
Well, I'll tell you what the difference between Israel and South Africa is.
Scheisse. What are you doing?
Stop it. I'll answer your question from before because I didn't get to say it sooner.
Okay.
So we'll get back from Eastern Europe. And the difference being that the Israelis are trying to protect a nation. The Afrikaners are trying to do nothing more than to protect their wealth by keeping down a native people.
That's the Afrikaners.
That's the difference.
Okay. I would say the Afrikaners really hate blacks. I would say that. They really hate them and think they're inferior. But remember,
I would say the Israeli army really hates Palestinians.
Well, but they're in a war. You hate your enemy in a war, otherwise you can't win.
What kind of a war?
What
kind of a war pits guns against rocks?
Oh, Eric, please. Are we going to become the organ for the Palestinian people now? Guns against rocks. I really feel sorry for these people. Maybe you mean guns against pipe bombs and guns against Soviet machine guns that are smuggled in. Guns against other kinds of weapons. People don't take a gun against a protester with a sign and a voice. They take a gun against a protester with a Molotov cocktail or a grenade, throwing it into a crowd of soldiers. That's what they take a gun against, and that's what they're doing. As this news item says, the police just kind of stood by and watched while these people said, Israeli army out, Palestinian...
This was a demonstration, and I believe it was a demonstration with Israelis as well. So they're not going to start shooting their own people, at least I certainly hope not.
Now, here's another thing. Okay, we have Israelis. It's not enough to say Israelis, Eric. It has to be said that this is a leftist-sponsored protest. Now, the important thing to remember with leftist-sponsored is what leftist implies in a global sense. It implies Soviet involvement, and we cannot ignore this. We cannot ignore it as much as we cannot ignore the fact that the U.S. is involved. And these, quote-unquote, little local squabbles are actually aspects of an East-West conflict that began probably before World War II began, and certainly will continue as long as there is that both nations exist. You know, I mean, these are aspects of an East-West battle, as it were.
Say hallelujah. We have a phone call,
632-6901. I would say hallelujah. He's probably on your side.
USB, you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to say for the Jewish people that I don't think what their government is doing is right.
Okay, how so?
Because they're not treating them as of the respect that they're supposed to be having.
Not treating the Palestinians with respect?
No.
Okay. Does anyone want to respond to that?
Well, okay, I find that hard to address, only in the sense that from the limited view that we have of this, not being there firsthand, what we see is an aggressive action. Okay, we're not talking right now, at least, about social injustice. There may be quite a lot of that. I really don't know. I assume that you're talking about it's a question of human dignity. Maybe the way the people in it, the Israelis, view the people who are living in their country. Maybe if that's what you mean, I can't address that. If you mean that the way the soldiers behave in fighting armed demonstrators reflects like they're ignoring these people's human dignity, I'd have to disagree in saying that if demonstrators are armed, it doesn't matter what nationality they are, that soldiers will have to defend themselves. That's really what I was saying in trying to say that I agree with this military action. I don't agree with, like, social injustice, which may be what you're talking about. I don't know to what extent that exists.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's. See, we don't have enough news information, at least on hand, about what the average Israeli's attitude is towards the average Palestinian person who's living there. Like I said, I don't think the Israeli government has really had a chance to implement a good program to try to make the two of them live together because of what the other Arab states have been doing over the last 30 years, 40 years rather.
Well, that's true. We don't really have the information to say.
Uh-huh. Well, I think I might be able to throw some light onto this because I am about to go to this New York Times article.
Okay.
And I want to thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
Let's hope we get some other callers. There is at least one person out there who has some kind of opinion on this. Our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516. And please give us a call and let us know what you think about this.
But just remember, it's in the Soviet Union's best interest to have Israel as screwed up as possible.
Well,
we know that.
Let's take a look at this article by John Kiffner of the New York Times.
Let's see. I might have something here that just relates.
Well, let's get to that after we get to this.
Oh, sure. Okay.
This has been on the bullpen for a little while here.
Okay, go ahead.
Israel's new tactic takes growing toll on both sides, and this might shed some light on the human factor here and how the Israeli soldiers actually feel about the Palestinian people. The Israeli army was reported today, and that was 2 days ago, Thursday, to be sending teams of psychologists to units in the Gaza Strip because it was worried about the effect of a new crackdown on the mental health of the troops. The development was reported by the three major Hebrew language newspapers and front page articles this morning. Under the new crackdown, the army has beaten hundreds of Palestinian men, women, and children with clubs, fists, and rifle butts over the last few days in a new officially declared policy of force intended to put a halt to a month and a half of unrest in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip. Soldiers have been going from house to house, beating people in the sealed-off refugee districts of Rafah, Khan Yunis, Nusayt, I'm probably pronouncing all of these wrong, and Jabalia in the Gaza Strip, according to foreign relief workers and Palestinian residents. Scores of Palestinians were reportedly beaten in the Nablu area of the West Bank today, and in Ramallah on Wednesday, as the army sought to force striking shops to open. "People are really terrified," a Western relief worker in Gaza said by telephone tonight. "This is the most effective thing they've done yet. They just beat anybody who was in their way." Defense Minister Yitzhak Rabin says the first priority is to use force, might, beatings. Palestinians and foreign relief workers in refugee districts say the policy appears to have been in effect.
This doesn't make them look any better than the Nazis.
That's true. Is this the fault of the press or what?
No, I look. First of all, it is a recognized psychological trait that oppressors do take on some of the characteristics of the oppressor. But I mean that's really bad news. I mean to actually see that reported, and it must be true. It must be at least true in a sense that they're going around into people's houses and doing something like that. If it is true,
it gets worse.
If it is true, it's really quite bad.
Okay, let's go through this article and then we can talk about that. Palestinians and foreign relief workers in refugee districts say the policy appears to have been in effect for about a week, resulting in hundreds of beatings, some in street clashes and others in house-to-house searches. But it is only in the last few days that it has been publicly articulated by officials and commented upon in the Israeli press. The newspaper Devar quoted a senior military official in the area as saying, "There is much sensitivity in the Israeli defense forces to the possibility that the orders given to the soldiers to use force and even to hit during the demonstrations may serve as a precedent which can be misunderstood by the soldiers and it can develop further and cause aggressive tendencies in military people." On Wednesday, the clinic treated 27 more people after another round of beatings. The injured included a 65-year-old man who was hospitalized with broken bones and several women, including one 60-year-old and a 12-year-old girl. Now, the thing is, these aren't people that have been hit by stray bullets. These are people that are singled out and beaten. Dr. Samir Badrai, the physician in charge, said he was shocked by the savage brutality. "It's quite clear that it was house to house because we have as many as four or five people from the same family and we have the blocks where they live."
Two other Western relief workers reported seeing a jeep full of soldiers stopping a youth who appeared to be between 12 and 14 years old on Gaza City's main street two nights ago. They said they saw one of the troops order the youth to put his right hand against a metal signpost, then strike it hard with his police nightstick. Defense Minister Rabin, outlining his policy the other day, said no demonstrators have died from being thwacked by soldiers dispersing riots in the areas.
No one has died from it all.
So anyway, we do have a phone call. I'd like to go to that before we lose it.
Go ahead.
Give out the phone number again, 632-6901. And good evening, USB. You are on the air.
I'm on the air?
Yes, you are.
Why?
You don't want to be on the air?
Well, I guess I don't really care.
Well, are you listening to the radio?
I was.
Okay, well, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I want to request Tiffany.
Goodbye. We have no use for that right now. Let me continue with the article. One goal of the strategy, along with that of declaring curfews and military zones closed to journalists, appears to be to avoid what is described here as the negative image being created by foreign press coverage. By stopping the use of firearms, the army has stopped the daily death toll, which had been a staple of the coverage. At least 38 Palestinians have been killed since protests started last month. The beatings are usually occurring in the sealed-off areas, frequently at night, thus avoiding television coverage that is regarded by the government as particularly harmful. Rabin says, "We've gone in with force, beating without playing games, but without using arms. From this, no one has died yet, and we also have fewer injured. I prefer a photo of curfew over shooting, burning tires, and petrol bombs." When there are demonstrations, this is General Mitzna now saying this, the army commander in the occupied West Bank, "When there are demonstrations like today, when young people go into the streets and prevent merchants from opening their stores, we will grab whom we can, and some of them will be beaten. They'll have to understand they can't get up at 9 or 10 a.m. and make stone throwing and tire burning their national sport and expect no consequences."
Okay, that's fine. That's understandable. That's good, sure.
The newspaper Yedioth Ahronoth described the new policy as focal treatment, meaning using a lot of force in the same place, beating inciters, forcing merchants to open their businesses, and forcing youngsters to clean the village or neighborhood of stones, blockades, and burn tires.
That's fine. At this point, I'd like to stop and say yes.
That's outrageous.
As long as they're addressing real aggressive action, that's perfectly justifiable in considering the horrible situation that they've got with people doing that. First, he's talking about looters. He's talking about violence. Those people who are using this opportunity to show how bad things are in Israel by going out deliberately and blowing things up for the press to photograph, that's what they're fighting, and that's the way they're trying to fight it. Yes, okay, that's fine. That's fine, and that has my support. It's the things that seem inappropriately despicable or inappropriately harsh, such as secret beatings, mm-hmm. which certainly evoke a lot of images that we don't have to speak. Now, that's where I draw the line of...
To conclude this article, one soldier was quoted as saying, "We handle the clubs just as we do the ammunition. The Arabs don't understand methods. You just got to come down on them with the clubs."
Oh, bro.
Roughly, and that's it. Now,
what is that? Is that a quote from, did he just paraphrase some Georgia
sure
cracker
from
1963?
It sure sounded like, I do recall one thing that Hitler said was that the Jews were a race, but certainly not a human race. They were subhuman.
Well, let's not bring him into that.
I don't like to bring him into this,
when I see the way that
Arabs are referred to.
Oh, I see.
As subhumans, almost.
And as blacks were referred to in this country.
Very much so, yes.
Okay.
History does repeat itself.
Frank.
Go ahead.
No. I think it's all been said already.
The studio
audience will remain silent.
Okay.
Well, the radio audience should give us their opinion, and hopefully the intelligent opinion this time. 632.
What they're probably going to do is write all sorts of letters in about us.
632-6901, area code 516.
We'll get a letter from the Friends of Palestinian Aggression. They'll say how rotten we are.
Well, I'd like to know that someone out there is listening and getting something out of it. But this whole policy is mm-hmm. something unprecedented as far as I can see. I've never actually seen...
Well, isn't the situation rather unprecedented?
Well, I see...
I mean, thank God it's unprecedented. It's a horrible situation.
as far as I can see, do you recall anything happening like this? Anything similar? I mean, this is a situation that's it's pretty unique as far as I can tell in the
world
history.
It's unique.
A created state. First, we start off with a state that was actually created, that was actually planned, right? To divide it up, given. And then you've had the problems surrounding that, but there are bigger issues than just the existence of the state and the justification for it. And these internal problems that are resulting, there's no precedent to follow. There's no rule. This kind of thing doesn't have a rule and fair play. You know, we can say we're outraged, but we don't know what it's like to be there, really.
That's true. Yeah, we don't know what it's like to be there, but
I don't know how fair the news coverage is in trying to give us an actual impression of what it's like to live there. What would you say?
Well, what I would say is that those kinds of actions, when you oppress a people that violently, I think that only leads to increased terrorism around the world, so you can't even point directly at all the effects.
How do you mean oppress? How do you mean oppress people in that way?
Well, what I mean by oppress people is when you read these reports of soldiers going around and beating on people, not beating on people who've been throwing rocks, but beating on people for the purpose of instilling terror in a population.
Yes.
Going into their own homes. And
that's right.
Them.
Going in there without regard to whether that particular family threw rocks the day before. Perhaps you could still justify that, although I don't think you could. But going into that house, beating up on those people in order to make the whole neighborhood afraid and therefore hope to stop their rock throwing.
Right.
That's wrong, and that can only lead to worldwide effects because you're going to have an increase in terrorism.
By the
that
same
way.
Token, we can't let the fear of increased worldwide terrorism stop us or stop them from doing what they think is appropriate. And that's a commonly used argument for not being stronger against terrorists worldwide. That you only make them worse.
Oh, you can be strong, but there are other ways.
Yeah, okay.
There are other ways to keep control of your territory. Other than going around and beating on people at random.
I don't mean to be an exponent of totalitarian methods, certainly, and that's what that is.
That's what that is.
That's what that the issue of making examples of people is certainly a fascist maneuver.
Well,
I mean, if there is such a thing.
That is what they are openly saying that they're doing.
However, that's only one small aspect of this large action that the country is taking, and I don't agree with it, but I don't attempt to say it's justified, but maybe it's a mistake. I don't know. I really don't know. I condemn it that individual action, but not most of the other things we've heard about.
All right. I would like to go to today's New York Times, another article by John Kiffner, which in fact surpasses yesterday's article in some of the rather graphic examples of what's going on over there. Again, probably for the last time, let me give out the phone number, 632-6901. If I don't get a call in, 3 minutes, I'm going to break the telephone right here on the air, okay? 632-6901. I'm going to smash it to bits. I mean it, and the people who know me know I'm capable of it. So if you do know me, and if you're one of those people that comes up to me later in the week and says, you know, I was going
to
call, but I just felt like not calling,
see if you would
consider this a command to call now, 632-6901. And this is important because what this country thinks is important for that region, since we do supply a lot of money to the region, and
and the region supplies us with some democracy in the Mideast.
Control the world, and that's what we do. So 632-6901.
Whoa, a little sneakiness is control the world, and that's what we do.
You don't think we don't control the world?
I certainly think we don't control the world. We're the wimps of the world.
All right, well, that's another story.
We've given up our claim on world leadership. We're like the wimps of the world, running from house to house saying, did you like what we just did? Did you like it? Would you be our pal?
I see one call. I want to see two. I see two calls. Let me see three, and I'll start picking up the phone.
Pick up the phone, bloody hell. Just pick
you
up the gotta, phone.
You got to get what you can get in this life, you know?
Yeah.
I want three calls at
Eric.
Once, and then I'll go with the first one. Good evening, USB. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, I'd just like to say that the eyes of the world are upon Israel right now, and the eyes of the world are condemning Israel. And rightly so.
Okay. Do you have anything to back that up?
Well, I mean, what they're practicing there is really apartheid. You have a majority population who do not have any rights, controlled by a minority population.
Uh-huh.
And it has finally been building and building, and now you have the situation you have today.
And so you compare this to South Africa, you see no difference?
Well, of course you have the difference. There are different historical differences.
Historical differences, correct, yeah.
But, you know, you just can't take... After a while, you just can't take so much. And you have to resort to violence.
Joe, do you want to address this?
Okay, saying... Well, this is what you were saying before when you brought up the comparison with Israel and... To help relieve this and to work with Israel. All they've wanted to do, as far as I can ever tell, is destroy the Israelis, is destroy the Jews who were put there. And maybe they shouldn't have been put there, but that's not the question anymore. It's not the question any more than whether East Europe should be equal, should be communist. I mean, it's just not the question. The question is, what do we do with these people? Can we try to work together? No, nobody really wants to. The people out there want to kill the Jews. That's their avowed purpose.
Well, right now it seems that they want to kill the Jews as a reaction more than an action.
They're using these poor Palestinian people that are stuck. No Arab state will take them in. They just want to use them and say, look, push them around from place to place. Let's let them. Let's make them. Let's do everything we can to make life miserable for these people so we can point to them and say, hey, look how bad the Israelis are treating them. When in fact, I don't think the Arabs are treating them any better.
The Palestinian issue is a conspiracy by the Arab world. That's ridiculous.
Why? Why is it ridiculous? Why?
Listen to what you're saying. That is so absurd.
Why? Please tell me why.
Why do you think they're fighting right now, the Palestinians?
I see a bunch of teenagers who are frustrated and are just striking out in whatever way they know how by throwing rocks.
Some of them maybe,
and burning tires.
I would say maybe, yeah.
And I don't know if that qualifies as being an organized terrorist. I think these are just people
but
that are...
it's not just teenagers, Eric. It seems to me that it's quite a lot of people. And
look
quite a lot
that.
Of people, it just isn't them.
First of all, look at how these people are living. They're living in camps. And
yeah,
they have no hope of getting out of that kind of life. I mean, think of how you would feel living in a camp with fences around it.
How many Israelis who live there live so well?
It's like they're gloating in the face of them. Yes, that's how I see it.
Well,
how would you think that would make you feel?
Oh, I have, like I said, there's no question that such a living condition would be horrible. But perhaps...
And you just read accounts of all the beatings...
And as I said, the
install the terrorists,
the secret
police, the Palestinian people.
Yes, as I said, the secret police type action that we heard first about in that first article. There's no justification for going from house to house to instill terror in a whole neighborhood. But perhaps the reason these neighborhoods are shut off by fences is because somehow the Israelis regard this regard these people as now a potential point from which an organized attack against them can be launched. I really don't know that. And maybe that's why these places were... Maybe these compounds were installed. I don't agree with them from a human point of view. And I... Maybe it's a totally military action.
What do you think is going to happen if this continues on a world scale? I mean, do you think there's going to be... Will develop into some type of sanctions against Israel?
People are, it seems, didn't you just read something where there's already some sort of talk of sanctions against Israel?
On our part? On our
not on our part, but on European nations.
Western
yeah.
Europe, I believe, yes, and of course Eastern Europe, too. There is talk of it, yeah. This is being viewed with outrage throughout the world. I don't think that can be denied.
Certain of the actions are barbaric.
In the world right now.
I'm
getting all the headlines. This is... You know, this is like South Africa was getting the headlines.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe the news media figured the people of the world got a little tired of hearing about Africa. They figured, well, there's also a lot of blood over there in the Middle East. Let's focus on that.
I don't think you can accuse the media of making this up. This is really happening.
No, I didn't say they made it up. It's just maybe they're capitalizing on it. Maybe it's, you know, that's really, I guess, just a side.
All right, so I'd like...
It doesn't belong, but...
I'd like to thank the person for calling and give out our phone number one more time.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's a...
632-6901, area code 516. Give us your opinion. We'd like to hear it. We do care. And yeah. our other listeners care. They want to hear it too.
We're not trying to speak from an all-knowing point. We've just got our.
And I noticed that the person who was calling before got frustrated and hung up while we were talking to the other person. But that's silly because.
But his phone bill. He's on hold, right?
Well, he's not on hold. No, it was ringing.
Oh well, and he wants to ring. He wanted to hear what we had to say.
While it's ringing, well, you can just leave the phone off the hook. But while it's ringing, you're not paying for that, so it's fine. Just leave it off the hook. 632-6901 area code 516.
What do you think about this?
And I would just like to ask Joe one thing here. How would you react to Soviet Jews being kept in these kind of camps? Because they were a potential threat.
How do we know that the way they have to live in the Soviet Union is not like that? You forget, the majority of the people in the Soviet Union live in tenements with bugs falling off the ceiling in their faces as they sleep at night. I mean, the living conditions in the Soviet Union are not really a matter to discuss.
Uh-huh.
You know, okay. I mean, and Jews are certainly pretty badly treated over there.
All right, let's go to the phones.
Radio station, but...
Hello? Someone on the line.
Didn't you just lose it?
Does this person want to be on the air?
I think you just lost it, Eric. I think the guy was talking.
Is anybody there?
Yes.
Do you want to be on the air?
No, not really.
Okay, goodbye. Okay, sorry about that.
There was a voice on there.
I guess there's a conversation already in progress, but 632-6901, that's our phone number. And, all right, let me just get briefly into this article here. First of all, a picture of a Palestinian who was arrested at a demonstration in Jerusalem. And he was walked into a police station, and Joe, I'd like you to hear this. A demonstrator was walked into a police station. A half hour later, he was brought out on a stretcher and put into an ambulance. And this is captured on photographs, and it did happen, apparently. According to one 22-year-old student, they entered the house like animals, shouting. They took us from the house, kicking us in the head, beating us, all the soldiers with their rifle butts. Then he was taken to the construction site of an unfinished house where he said the soldiers put an empty bucket over his head. Several of the soldiers held him down, he said, gripping his arms to force his hands against a rock. Two others, he said, beat his hands with lengths of 2x4s, breaking the bones. So, that is one account. There are others. Let's go to some of the calls. We now seem to have a few, so let's go to them. Good evening, USB. You're on the air.
How you doing, man? You know, I hear what you're talking about tonight, you know, about all these atrocities. Too bad. You think maybe the Israelis would, you know, understand and have compassion since the Second World War and the stuff that has happened to them. But how do you feel about that? I mean, but, you know, it's happening all around the world, too. If you look in Vietnam, if you look in Laos and Cambodia and Kampuchea right now, this is all happening around the world.
Mm-hmm. But somehow you think that... that the people that suffered probably the greatest massacre of the 20th century, and perhaps even of Western civilization.
Well, I doubt that. I mean, remember, Stalin did kill about 12 million Russian peasants.
Yeah, but because they were Russian peasants?
In sheer numbers, he...
But Stalin did. Look what Stalin did to all those people, but, you know, right after the revolution. You know what Gorbachev is saying about these people right now? He's putting Stalin down.
Listen, pal, what a Soviet dictator has to say is complete... is completely divorced from anything you can regard as historical truth. They have what you can call loose-leaf history. I mean, a new dictator comes in, he denounces the previous guy. It's the same bull. You never know where the Soviets stand. I mean, and that's not...
Oh, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying in that... Wait, I'm on the phone, man. All right. I know what you're saying in that you think maybe the Russians aren't going to change. Do you feel the Russians are going to change?
I can say this. Communist philosophy will never change. Maybe some conditions in the Soviet Union can change.
It has to change. There's no other alternative. These people have been living like hell for years. And after the revolution, you know, I mean, don't you see the expansion what went through Cambodia and North Vietnam and Vietnam mm-hmm. itself? All these countries, I mean, people getting massacred. 40 million? I mean, you thought the Second World War was bad for the, you know, the Jewish people?
Mm-hmm.
What about all the Vietnamese boat people that came from Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those people fled in terror
mm-hmm.
from, like, communist expansion
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Yeah,
it's,
no,
it's happening all over the world, and there has to be a change. There has to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there has to be, or else something really, if something really terrible is going to happen. The problem is, okay, this is going to have to be, I mean, this issue is going to have to be addressed in another show. I mean, yeah, communist expansion and how it's going to affect our immediate futures.
But Gorbachev is willing to change. I mean, after these people went through that revolution saying, yes, we're going to be free, we're each going to have everything ourselves, they have nothing. It has offered nothing. Communism has not offered anything to anybody. I mean, these people are starving. They're hungry. They wait online for food.
Yeah, but it's...
I mean, it's got to change.
It's important to point out that, in spite of the fact that these things are apparent, you have nations even today, even in recent years, perfectly willing to go communist and perfectly willing to accept Soviet support in spite of all that it implies. But I'm really afraid that we can't really talk about... the Soviet Union right now.
Okay, you want to talk about Israel?
Well, only because that's the subject of the show tonight. And
I should explain here that Joe has 10 minutes to make a train, but I'll continue to talk about Israel with whoever wants to talk about Israel. And
I'm really sorry about having to take the train tonight, Eric. This is a great show. I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Hey, all right, good. You're doing a good show, guys.
Thanks.
I mean, I love the show because I got Dane Bramage. I mean brain damage.
Thanks.
You certainly do. Thanks for calling. Oh, boy. 632-6901 is our phone number, area code 516. If you have thoughts on Palestinians, Israelis...
Great, keep up the fight.
Soviet communism... What, are you going to run to the train?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to. Well, I have to. Frank's car is parked too far away.
Well, I guess you can make it across that field in 10 minutes.
I think so.
If anyone out there has access to the Long Island Railroad, tell them to wait for Joe. He's going to be running for the train. Thanks very much, Joe, for coming in.
No problem. It was great, Eric.
Okay.
Once again, I'm really, really sorry I couldn't stay for the next 20 minutes.
I'm sorry you're going to miss these atrocities I'm going to read off.
Well,
but,
you're taping the program, right?
I am taping the program.
Frank, you pretty much know how I feel.
Yeah, but I'm not going
to... I don't think he's going to say the things that you want to say.
All right. Next time I'll try to take my car out so we can stay for the whole 2 hours.
Yeah.
So long, Eric.
Well, yeah, welcome to sleep in the newsroom. You know, it's... we have a nice table there.
So long, guys.
Okay.
Good night, Joe.
Bye-bye. 632-6901, area code 516. Let's go to the phones, and then we will get back to this article here. And good evening to you. You're on Brain Damage.
Eric, can you get me on somebody else?
Excuse me?
Somebody else? Can you transfer me to another one?
I take it you don't want to be on the air.
I have to get in.
Ah, okay. Let me transfer you... I'll transfer you to the purple line. How's that?
Thank you.
Here we go. Yeah, there, on the purple line. Okay, that's our phone number, 632-6901. Let's go back to this article then. Today, witnesses watched one of four young Palestinians being walked into the police station across from the Wailing Wall by a group of policemen. The police said the four had been singled out for incitement and stone throwing after a brief demonstration near the dome of the Rock Mosque. After about a half hour, during which screams were heard, the witnesses said the man was brought out on a stretcher and put into an ambulance that had pulled close to the police station door. His face was swollen and he was seemingly unconscious, a witness said. He did not move. The police had mounted a huge show of force in the Old City in anticipation of demonstrations on the Muslim Sabbath today. Last Friday, demonstrators clashed with the police, who threw tear gas into Al-Aqsa Mosque and beat many people. Today passed relatively quietly with a brief march of several hundred chanting youths waving the banned Palestinian flag. But tonight, the Jerusalem police for the first time used their new emergency powers in the city to declare a curfew in the A-Tura neighborhood near the Mount of Olives after Arab residents threw stones, burned tires, and blocked roads. Many Palestinians are avoiding going to the hospitals, if possible, for fear they will be arrested there or their names on hospital records will make them liable to later punishment. Medical workers say that in Gaza alone, there are hundreds of cases of infection from inadequate home treatment of injuries. Thus, it's difficult to be precise about the number of people who have been beaten in the 3 days since the policy was declared, but it clearly runs well into the hundreds and perhaps higher. Accounts from Palestinian districts indicate the policy has, in fact, been in effect for more than a week. For the most part, the beatings have occurred in refugee centers, which are now closed to journalists by the army or in remote villages. They often occur at night. The army is not giving out specific information.
There are a lot of broken hands from clubbing and also some broken legs, said an official of Medical Aid, a Palestinian organization that provides medical treatment on the West Bank and Gaza. The number is really huge, including both men and women, certainly hundreds. We are deeply shocked by the evidence of the brutality with which people are evidently being beaten, said Angela Williams, the acting director of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency in the Gaza Strip. We are especially shocked by the beatings of old men and women. The new policy has thus far drawn little political or other criticism from Israelis. Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir defended the policy, saying it was not Defense Minister Rabin's policy alone, but decided upon and instituted by the government as a whole. Let me see if I can find another example of what's going on. The Israeli television showed an unidentified army captain who said, "You chase anybody you have to and beat them up, and altogether it works pretty well." Many people, including foreign relief workers and other Westerners, have witnessed beatings in the West Bank town of Ramallah. Witnesses reported dozens of beatings there on Tuesday as the army tried to force striking shopkeepers to open their stores. Several witnesses independently described an incident in which soldiers threw a tear gas canister into a grocery store and locked the merchant inside. Other residents broke his windows to rescue him, and he was taken to the Ramallah hospital in convulsions, medical workers and other witnesses said. Haaretz said in its account of beatings in Ramallah, a discussion with some of those assaulted showed the beatings were often done in a demonstrative way, deliberately, in order to set an example, and often the victims were quiet residents, adults and children, who are not suspected in violent or illegal activity. The Hebrew language newspaper extensively quoted the account of Abed al-Basat Hamdan, who is 25 years old, the owner of a furniture store, who said he and others ran away after a clash between soldiers and stone-throwing youths. "They chased us and caught me," Mr. Hamdan said. "They tied my hands and took me to the main square of Ramallah, where the soldiers gather. They didn't check who I was, even though I tried to explain in Hebrew and English that I own a store. All the way to the square, they beat me with clubs, sticks, and fists and cursed me. They broke sticks on my shoulders and head and all the time yelled to the people around, 'Watch, watch.' Then they sat me next to a pile of garbage. I tried to explain I am a businessman, but they weren't willing to hear a word. They asked me to say, 'Arafat's a maniac.' I refused. They kicked me in the mouth with their boots. They hit me in the back and spit on me for an hour and a half." Another area in which there were many beatings, according to a Haaretz report and other sources, was the Jalazan Refugee Center in the West Bank on Wednesday night. Defense Minister Rabin visited the center on Tuesday and rocks were thrown at him. Discussions with people in the camp, the Haaretz account said this morning, showed the army soldiers, among them officers, beat residents who were pulled out of their homes by force without any reason that could be seen by the eye. In the hallways of the hospital here, residents of the villages of Kabatia and Hawara, visiting friends and relatives, debated which village had the rougher treatment. Shadi Abdullah, a young man from Harara, and I'm probably pronouncing all of this wrong, whose legs were deep purple with bruises, said he was sleeping when the soldiers came around 10 p.m. They herded him and others onto a bus, he said, took them away, beat them, and left them on the road. They are animals, not soldiers, he said. And the reporter who wrote this, John Kiffner, had a personal witness. On January 9th, this reporter visiting Shifa Hospital in Gaza saw two women and a half dozen young men hospitalized with injuries from beatings. There were no patients in the hospital with bullet wounds, which had previously been the only injuries it was treating. One young man from the poor Shajayi neighborhood that has been a center of stone-throwing defiance had a broken left hand and both feet markedly swollen from beatings. Although the order to beat Palestinians was made public now, I guess it's 4 days ago, foreign aid workers and Palestinians have been speaking for several weeks of what they described as a marked increase in beatings. And that's pretty much all that I have right now from the New York Times, where day by day the articles get seemingly more graphic as far as the horrors, and I guess to say atrocities would not be stretching it too far. Shocking to see this kind of thing going on and to realize that Israelis are behind it. 632-6901, area code 516, give us a call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Eric, it's Joe.
Joe, did you make the train?
Yeah. It hasn't come yet.
You've run all the way across the field, and that's incredible. I don't think anyone's ever done that before.
I should say. It was kind of funny. It's kind of like a military operation in full field tactics. This bloody bag. Anyway, I was thinking, perhaps Israel did make a mistake in the beginning. Maybe they didn't foresee this trouble, but maybe their mistake in trying to fob these people off on the other Arab nations. Maybe what they should have done was accepted them openly right away and made a really big to-do about it and really used the media coverage that they had, the favorable media coverage that they had at that time, I think, to show how openly they were going to accept these other people.
Uh-huh.
Since they didn't, the people like we can consider their enemies at this point have capitalized on that lapse and made these people who may have felt somewhat rejected even worse. They may have made them feel even worse. And using this as a method of achieving their ends, which is to promote as much unrest in that country as possible. And in response to the phone call before, the existence of these camps is probably only these imprisoned neighborhoods. Use of concentration camp is a pretty pejorative term, and it evokes too many images. But you know, I know we don't know what they're really like. But these segregated areas, which the other caller likened to apartheid areas, which really I think are different. These areas were formed maybe out of a need for protection, and maybe an overreaction to what they perceived as a threat. A bit too late to do anything about it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that the people inside those camps won't really care why they were formed or what the overall view is. They're in there now. They're frustrated. They're angry. And
they're being used, yeah.
Now, I want to ask you something, though. Do you think there is any way whatsoever that the current policies will amount to anything of a positive nature for any of the sides?
Well, now it's kind of like, what's the metaphor? Locking the door, barn door after the horses let loose. There's a whole hellish mess there now. I don't know if any social, and now it's too late for a social solution. I don't know what I don't know what they can do. I think the first one is to, the first thing is to react to the immediate threat, then to address the problem, the internal interpersonal problems. That existed and will probably continue to exist for some time. But the immediate problem is to deal with a physical threat. I mean, they're not doing it in the best way, apparently, in many cases. And in other cases, they're reacting in a justifiable way. It's a real mixed bag. I'm not saying we have to take the whole thing, but maybe some people who have particularly hostile opinions and are in the military are using this opportunity to vent those feelings with these particularly horrible moves that we're hearing about, that we're reading about in the paper. I'm sure that there are a number of actions on the part of the internal terrorists and particularly violent demonstrators that we're not hearing about, because maybe it's not as colorful. I don't know. Maybe that is a selective reportage on the part of the news media, which, you know, is their right and certainly not to be condoned. But maybe as a result of that. But I'm sure that there are things that we're not reading and hearing about.
Joe, we have another call. What I'm going to try to do is patch us all together.
Okay, do you know what time it is?
It's 11:52, which is the time your train's supposed to be here.
We probably have about a minute here.
Okay, so you just hang up when your train comes. I'll try to get this person in.
Okay.
Let's see if I can do this.
No, you can just put me on hold.
I think I'm going to have to do that, but just hold on a moment.
Okay.
Well, I push the magic buttons here and see if we can get something. Hello, is this the other caller?
Yes.
Okay, hold on one moment. I'm going to attempt to patch us to Joe, who's at the train station. Let's hit. Okay, we should all be together. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And our new caller, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, let's let our new caller speak.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm just kind of Joe's attempt to try to justify all this.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm tired of you trying to justify Israel's actions.
Did you hear that, Joe?
Yeah, he said he's sorry that I'm trying to justify Israel's
actions. He's tired of it. Would you like to respond to that, Joe?
Wait a minute. There was a lot of traffic, but he said that he's sorry, or he's asking me why I'm trying to justify
Israel's
actions.
He said he's tired of hearing you justify Israel's actions.
Well, that's what this discussion is about, right?
I'd have to agree. Yeah, we.
That's the position of this show, is trying to discuss it.
Why don't you back up?
And my position was that you can't be taken in by what seems to me to be a manipulative propaganda move, similar to the one which got Judge Bork kicked out of his rightful position. And I think that's what's happening.
Well, I'm
trying to say that you have to look at the whole picture and say that at least half of what they're doing is justifiable.
Let's not bring Bork into this, but I would like to ask our caller to justify.
It's a media blitz. It's a propaganda smear.
Okay, Joe, I'd like to ask
our... upon them is fair, but it makes them sound like real villains. Look, I'm really sorry, but it's about to pull away.
Oh, the train? I didn't know the train was there.
I'll be back with you in 2 weeks, Eric. Pick
okay.
up the topic. Maybe we'll talk about...
Okay, Joe, you hang up. I'll talk to the caller.
What?
You hang up, and I'll talk to the caller. Joe, are you there? I mean...
Yeah, I'm
here. Yeah, okay, now would you like to back up what it was you were saying as far as why are you tired of hearing this?
Can't justify attacking people, beating them up when you occupy their land.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Israel has brought this upon itself by taking over these territories 20 years ago and refusing to leave them.
Uh-huh.
So obviously the Palestinians are not going to like, first of all, being occupied, second of all, being oppressed by Israel. I mean, they're going to have to do something about it.
What bothers me is that no matter what they do, people are going to say it's Soviet-inspired or it's terrorist-inspired. But what I see is people that are genuinely frustrated, and they're striking out, and really the only way they know how, by throwing rocks and burning tires. If it was such a carefully orchestrated type of a thing, I think they would have a little bit more than just rocks. They would have, you know, real guns and an organized terrorist plot, which they really don't seem to have. It seems to be very disorganized, if anything.
If the Soviet backed, they'd have a little bit more success than they're having now.
Yeah, it's pathetic to see how little success they've had, how completely little success they've had. But I want to thank you for calling, sir. And let's go to our next call. 632-6901 is our phone number. And good evening. You're live on the air.
Hello, Eric.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, it can't be organized, their whole entire fight, because they're so oppressed that they don't have the means to organize themselves. I mean, if they went to go purchase guns, they would be beaten down. I mean, they are the minority as mm-hmm. opposed to Israel. I mean...
Well, they're the majority in their area, but they are the minority. I'm not quite sure how the numbers work out, but...
As a whole, they're still oppressed. I mean, you figure the larger government, the more organized government, would oppress them. There's no way that they could possibly organize in such a way. You figure it's basically the youth that is doing it.
Uh-huh.
They're now seeing that they don't have the freedom.
Uh-huh.
You know, they can't organize themselves. There's got to be some way that they have to learn to organize themselves. There's got to be some meeting ground in between.
Well, now, who do you think that one particular side has to do a little more? How is this going to happen?
Well, I think that Israel has got to accept that they're going to be there, and they've got to accept that you can't live in a constant state of turmoil. It's just going to destroy both sides eventually. You know, Israel's got to become accustomed to the fact that the Palestinians are going to be there, that they're going to stay there, and there's got to be a meeting ground.
It seems almost as if it's a prerequisite to live in that particular part of the world to be as stubborn as you can possibly be, and that's...
It's the only way you can survive.
Well, it's also a good way to destroy yourself, because when you have stubborn people meeting each other, this is what happens. And
that's what I say. There's got to be a meeting ground. They've got to come to terms. But because they are so stubborn, they're not going to. There's got to be some, like, I'm saying, okay, granted the Soviet Union's in there, but there's got to be some sort of partial mediator in between to have everyone understand each other.
Can you think of a mediator? I mean, I don't think the United States would be thought of as a fair mediator.
No, there's, first of all, the United States would be biased because of the Soviet Union, and then they'd be worrying about, oh, who's going to encroach, and then it'd become another puppet government. I mean, even the UN can't do anything, really.
Yeah, I think pretty much the only thing everyone agrees on is that the UN isn't effective.
Yeah, the UN is one of the most ineffective forms of mediation anywhere. No one listens to them because they have no force.
Yeah, and that includes the United States, because there have been occasions when the United States has been addressed as violating some aspect of international law, and this isn't the UN but the World Court, and U.S. and Nicaragua. So the United States does ignore international rulings when it's in their interest, and I think almost every country does. So, yes, international rule really doesn't seem to mean anything.
Yeah, granted, I'm not a militant, but I think the UN would be far better off with an army of its own.
Uh-huh.
You know, just so they could go in and say, okay, this is what should be done.
That kind of scares me.
Granted, it's scary, but they've got to have something to back them up. They've got to have some form of control. Because, actually, the UN would probably be the best mediator, because there are so many people from different countries.
Uh-huh.
You know, that they would be the best mediator, but they have no way of enforcing anything, and I think there should be some way. There should be some provision for them to enforce, to take some sort of action against a country if they don't listen to the mediation. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your call. We are out of time.
Okey-doke.
So thanks very much for calling.
Bye-bye.
And that ends our program. Whether we got anywhere tonight, or whether we know of any possible answers, as far as I'm concerned, the only way we're going to find a mediator is if God himself comes out of the sky, or maybe an alien race offers to lend itself to this. I don't know how we're going to solve this problem, but I think one good step is to begin talking about it, and that is what we have done tonight. Our thanks to Joe Evangelista and Frank, right?
Yes.
Frank, I'm sorry. you came with Joe
and... Frank from Spionk.
Frank from Spionk, yes. We did learn something about Spionk today. And perhaps you'd like to just say one very, very brief closing remark on this whole issue?
Well, I think you've summarized it very well, Eric, and I agree with you. And I could only rephrase what you've already said, because I agree.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for coming, and I assume driving Joe all the way from Spionk.
Yes, indeed.
At what must have been a breakneck speed. be careful driving back. Joe, I want to thank you. You're on the train now, of course. You can't hear me, but thanks for coming and expressing your views. And we'll have you out again, I believe, in 2 weeks. And I'm Eric Corley for Brain Damage. Stay tuned for The Brothers coming up next here at 12 o'clock on WUSB Stony Brook. Thanks to all our callers, too. Good night.
On the grass, the lunatic is on the grass, remembering games, daisy chains, laughs. Got to keep the lunatic on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. Thank you. lunatic is in my head.
This is Beth with the U.S. Concert Billboard for Sunday, January 24th. Tonight, Kenny Rankin will be playing at Fat Tuesdays, Ron Carter will be at Sweet Basil, and Rosemary Clooney will be at the Blue Man. For Monday, January 24th, the Gil Evans Orchestra will be playing at Sweet Basil, the Les Paul Trio at Fat Tuesdays. For Tuesday, January 26th, the Betty Carter Trio will be at Fat Tuesdays, Combo Limbo at the Rodeo Bar, Joe Satriani at the Bottom Line, Paquito de Riviera and Hilton Ruiz at the Blue Note, Ron Carter at Sweet Basil, Roy Ayers at SOB's, and the Splat Cats at Lone Star. That's Tuesday, January 26th. Wednesday, January 27th, the Betty Carter Trio will be at Fat Tuesdays, Eka Mouse and Shinehouse will be at SOB's, the Feelies will be at Drums, Paquito de Riviera and Hilton Ruiz will be playing at the Blue Note, and Pat Travers will be at the Cat Club. Papa Zaraka at Sundance, free admission, and Ron Carter will be playing at Sweet Basil. That's Wednesday, January 27th. Thursday, January 28th, the Betty Carter Trio will be playing at Fat Tuesdays, Jack Watson will be at the Bottom Line, She Loves Jezebel will be at the Beacon Theater, Paquito de Riviera and Hilton Ruiz will be playing at the Blue Note. Ron Carter will be at Sweet Basil. And the Vipers will be playing at the Lone Star. For Friday, January 29th, Avatar will be playing at Showcase. The Betty Carter Trio will be playing at Fat Tuesday. Chamber Brothers and the Spencer Davis Group will be at the Saint. Dr. Hook and Lucky Seven will be at Lone Star. Show Eli and Will Sexton. The Broadcasters and Johnny Copeland will be playing at the Rift. Kiss and Ted Nugent will be playing at the Nassau Coliseum. Kicks will be at the Showcase. The Mingus Dynasty will be at the Village Gate. Paquito de Riviera and Hilton Ruiz will once again playing at the Blue Note. Ron Carter will be at Sweet Basil, and Sun Ra will be playing at the Knitting Factory. That's for Friday, January 29th. Saturday, January 30th, the Betty Carter Trio will be at Fat Tuesdays. Game Theory and Tiny Lights will be at Maxwell. James Blood Ulmer and Wayne Harvest will be at Bottom Line. Joe Satriani will be at Sundance. Liz Joy will be at IMAC of Huntington. Mingus Dynasty will be playing at the Village Gate. Paquito de Riviera and Hilton Ruiz will be at the Blue Note. Ron Carter will be at Sweet Basil. Roomful of Blues will be at Lone Star. And Sun Ra will be playing at the Knitting Factory. That's Saturday, January 30th. Sunday, January 29th, the Betty Carter Trio will be playing at Fat Tuesdays again. Paquito de Riviera and Hilton Ruiz will be at the Blue Note. Ron Carter will be at Sweet Basil. Sun Ra will be at the Knitting Factory, and White Snake will be at Meadowland. This has been the Concert Billboard USA for Sunday, January 24th. The Concert Billboard can be heard weekdays, 3 and 9 a.m., 4:30 and 10 p.m., weekdays at noon, and if you missed anything, call USC at 632-6901.
your eyes, shades to hide your habits. I don't know your age, though you guessed mine, my sign, your sign. The opening line is always just the same. The same intention, destination. Just you and me and rainbows.
Down asleep in onion fields.